Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
In anticipation of the start of a new ministry here at the Unitarian Society later in 2017, I want to discuss the care and feeding of the ministry. Not the care and feeding of the minister. The care and feeding of the ministry. With the call and settlement of a new minister, which we anticipate later this year, the opportunity arises to create a new ministry. But it's not a completely new ministry, since it is the ministry of an ongoing religious community. But it will be new in the sense that there will be a new person in what is generally agreed is the central and most visible, but not only, leadership position, that of parish minister. The ministerial search committee will have done its best to find for the society the best possible match for the needs and dreams of the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood, but a new ministerial leader will bring changes, even with the strong lay leadership, which is one of the society's great assets. Well, first, I will define ministry in a freely gathered religious society such as this one. Second, I will speak of the role of the professional minister. Third, I will speak of the roles of the members of the society in sustaining and nurturing the ministry. And fourth and finally, I will say a little bit of considerations you might have in mind for when the new minister does arrive. So first, what is ministry? Well, Johanna Seel said it succinctly. Ministry is everything a congregation does, and everything a minister does on behalf of the congregation. All this is ministry. Ministry is done by the members, by employees, by professional ministers, by the director of religious education, by the music director. This is all the work of ministry. And this message focuses on the totality of this. And I will mention briefly the role of the professional minister. Ministry within Unitarian Universalism is the work of living according to our principles. It is the work of building the beloved community in which every person may have spiritual freedom, develop his or her gifts, and have a fair share of the earth's resources. As freely gathered religious communities in a faith which does not have a single creed or set of beliefs, our values and practices are central, and the religious community is a democratic community. So ministry is not the exclusive province of the ordained clergy, however clergy are central to the work of the ministry. Central to Unitarian Universalism is what we call congregational polity. This means that the local religious society, the congregation, is self-supporting and self-governing. We do not have bishops who tell us what to do. The defining document of congregational polity dates back to 1648. It is known as the Cambridge Platform. And the Cambridge Platform is very long and detailed. But two key roles are described in it. For the whole mechanism in the 1600s of the religious community was the support of a minister and a teacher, two individuals specified in the Cambridge platform. But it also defined other roles which were provided by the members in roles such as deacons. It also provided for the manner of governance. But from the very start, congregational polity needed shared ministry. So ministry in the congregation is, by its very nature, shared. In some aspects, the laity take the lead. In other aspects, the minister leads. In still others, the religious educator, what they call the teacher in the Cambridge platform, leads. And everything a congregation does is ministry. Worship, or as humanists prefer to call it, the Sunday meeting. Pastoral care and counseling. Social action. Building rentals. Governance and administration. Stewardship. Religious education for children and adults. Now, I just want to do a little aside on building rentals. You've already heard about the mention this morning. Building rentals are ministry for two reasons. One, they bring resources in for the congregation's programmatic work. But they also, as Holly suggested, acquaint the community with the congregation. So that just means not every potential rental is a good deal for us. Sometimes people want to rent our buildings because they believe we will allow anything to happen. But anything that happens, we own, even if we're being paid rent for the use of the space. So we do have the right to say no to rentals, no matter how good the money looks. Whenever there is a query about doing a wedding or a memorial service that doesn't involve the resident minister, i.e. yours truly, I have to find out what they really have planned. The fact that we let them do it may not be enough of a representation of what we're about. But as I said, not only is everything ministry that we do, but every member is a minister. And much of the Western world says this is the case, but it is especially true in self-governing congregations. But the minister has an important role, and a Baptist colleague of mine, the Reverend Dr. Earl William Thomas of Lakeview, New York, sums it up this way. He said, a pastor needs to know three things: how to preach, how to love, and how to count. What he left out of that simple formulation is that a pastor must also lead, but in the Black Baptist churches in which he serves, once called, the pastor is the leader of the church. Well, to lead well, a minister must preach and lead worship well, genuinely care for the people, that's the love part, and be able to judge when changes and projects are doable and will add to the life of the congregation when they will not. That is to say, what he meant, the pastor had to know how to count. The pastor had to know how many votes were on the board before he tried something new. The sharing of ministry within Unitarian Universalist congregations has been revitalized in recent years, decades even, by the development of small group ministries, what we call connection groups here, and other ways of doing ministry together. In some congregations, it's been the training and empowerment of worship associates and pastoral associates, and we do have a pastoral care committee here. Something like the deacons in our cousin traditions, which, like it or not, include the Baptists. They, too, have congregational polity. Well, ordained or professional ministry describes the work of the credentialed clergy. but it's always work that is done in collaboration with the congregation, on behalf of the congregation, or in some cases in community ministry settings. The balancing of responsibilities in shared ministry will differ from congregation to congregation. We are not all alike. It will depend on the history of that congregation, the emphases of interests among the membership, and the distribution of talents among the professional ministry and the laity. This congregation, through its history, has known a wide range of those distribution of talents among ministers. In fact, last night, much was made of the fact that your longest or second longest serving minister could never remember the name of any of the members. And I will put in a kind word for the late Reverend Patton, in that in a congregation of this size, it takes a while to learn all the names. But 20 years? Well, ministers play a leadership role, but are not employees as typically understood. Rather, minister and congregation have an open-ended and collaborative relationship. That's why you call ministers, you don't hire ministers. Only interim and consulting ministers have contracts of limited duration. The congregation calls and may dismiss a minister. In the collaboration, however, neither one is 100% in charge, although the parties do not have the same balance of authority and responsibility. In worship, the minister has the greater authority and responsibility. In finance, the lay leadership has the greater authority and responsibility. And you can balance things out in all the areas of stewardship and leadership and program. Yet ministers serve as executive leaders. Here at the Unitarian Society, the minister is the chief of staff, which is readily understood in any organization, religious or secular. But we also have here a ministry team, which the minister leads, which includes the minister, the music director, and the director of religious education. Another congregation might define that team differently. Though, although the minister is the leader and the supervisor of the other members of the team, it is a collaborative team process as we do our work together. Some of which you hopefully have seen in services where all three of us take part. Each member of the team has the opportunity to initiate, contribute, and disagree. And Johanna Seal and Ron Levy and I work very well together, and I suspect the two of them will work very well with your next called minister, whoever that may be. Well, ministry is built on and embodied in relationships that are loving, ethical, and clearly defined. Now, a minister may have friends within the congregation, but he or she cannot possibly be personal friends with every individual member. A minister leads in part by virtue of the position, but leads most effectively when the relationships are good. The minister's major responsibility for relationship building with lay leaders and with the entire membership of the congregation. But there are also relationships outside the congregation with other clergy and religious communities, with local businesses, with public officials, with denominational bodies, with community organizations, and yes, with funeral directors. In every town, there is a funeral director who knows to call the Unitarian Society for this kind of situation, or another congregation for another kind of situation. Well, my point, how do the lay people care for and feed the ministry? It begins by recognizing that each individual is part of the ministry. Each of you is part of the ministry. Whether you sit on the board of directors or a committee, volunteer for a program, contribute financially, or just sitting in the Sunday service, you are caring for and feeding the ministry. Now, if you were to ask me what is the most important way a layperson cares for and feeds the ministry, I would answer with two words: be present. You need to be here, primarily for Sunday services, but not only for Sunday services. You were invited this morning to come to the board meetings and attend there. That's part of a ministry of presence for the society. Those of you at the fellowship feast last evening supported the ministry by your presence. You, in fact, ministered to each other last evening with your presence, your food, your performances, your hosting of tables, your cleaning up in the kitchen. Not only did you make a program successful, everyone here last night loved each other. You nurtured each other. You deepened relationships. That is ministry. When the new ministry begins, you need to be here for the new minister, to be sure, but also for each other. Now, last fall, I'll give you an example. Last fall, there were two sudden deaths in the congregation: Mary Bootens and Peter Levy's. Your presence was important to their families. That is part of what I mean by ministering to each other, the ministry of presence. It was also important for you to be with each other. For in each of these deaths, many of you lost a treasured friend and fellow congregant. Your presence when Mary and Peter died also supported my work as your resident professional minister. Your long-term relationships with these two, each of whom I had known for only a year, gave my pastoral care and planning of the memorial services a context. You gave me information that was helpful. Now, as a minister, funeral directors and family members will ask me to officiate at funerals and memorials for people who are not part of the gathered congregation and whom I do not know. The ministry to the dying and the bereft is demanding enough, but it is less hard within the context of a community, especially a religious community, where the people minister to each other in life and in loss. So you need to be here day in and day out, not just for the crises, and there are crises in the life of every congregation, but every day, even for the mundane moments of community. You need to be what my late colleague, the Reverend Rudy Nemser, called the long-haul people, the ones who sustain this precious institution and care for each other, especially when times are tough, but just as important when everything is going well. When things are going well, you are caring for and nurturing the relationships and the structures that will sustain you when there is loss and crisis. Finally, here are some considerations for the start of the new ministry in a few months and for the new person who will become your next religious leader. The minister will need to start by getting settled and working with the elected leadership, with the staff, and with the membership at large. Be supportive of this process, but also be patient. A new minister and the congregation will need to get to know each other, and this takes time. When I go to a new congregation as an interim minister, knowing I only have 2 years to work with a group, sometimes only 1 year, I start by having one-on-one meetings with anywhere up to 20 people who are identified as key leaders by the board of trustees or the transition team or some combination. 20 meetings may not seem like a lot, but these are intense meetings, and in them I intend to go deep because there's a lot to do in a short time. You know, it's sort of like boot camp for the interim ministry with both leaders and the minister. Now, you will meet the new minister during a candidating week, or the potential new minister, and it'll make your judgment whether the candidate proposed by the search committee is the correct choice. The search committee may present only one candidate, but it's still up to the membership to decide. I do not know how your new minister, when called, will begin to know you when settled. There is more than one good way to begin, but it takes time and energy, both physical energy and emotional and spiritual energy. Some of those one-on-one meetings I have with leaders in new congregations are among the most exhausting things I have done. Well, many of you will meet the minister only informally during the first few months and maybe even during the first year. Be patient. No minister can complete the minister side of getting to know everyone both quickly and well. It takes time. And you will need to allow the minister time and space. First, to do the work of the ministry in a substantive and effective way, week in and week out. And second, have uninterrupted time for self and family, what we now call self-care. You deservedly have high expectations for your ministers. The quality of Sunday service that you expect requires a lot of work and collaboration. If Ron and Johanna and I ran on parallel tracks and didn't communicate with each other, we would save time, but the outcome would not be nearly as good. It takes time to collaborate. It also takes time to do the intense preparation work, whether for a story for all ages, for a message, or for getting just the right piece of music and the right person to play it. Now, one of the privileges of professional ministry is that study, reflection, and spiritual practice are part of the job description. I, in fact, have a colleague who claims to spend 3 hours a day on spiritual practice. Okay? I've known monks who've done that. But you do what makes you the whole person who can be the outstanding minister that this particular friend of mine is. He is a truly outstanding minister. And if that's how he does it, great. That's what works in creating a good minister and a good ministry. But study, reflection, and spiritual practice require time and space to focus. I spend one day a week either in my office at home or in a library doing the reading and research that I could pursue uninterrupted, to do it with focus, not in bits and pieces between meetings and phone calls. And if I'm writing, I will even disconnect my MacBook from the internet. Yes, Martin looks terrified. Well, I hope you turn off your phone when you're seeing clients. I once had a lawyer do some work for me who had a huge computer display by his desk, and it dinged every time an email came in. Every time he dinged, he looked over to see who it was from. He was not the most attentive lawyer I've ever used. Well. And one thing that's important about nurturing a ministry is to recognize that good boundaries make for good ministries. Good boundaries allow for the time the minister needs for quality work and a good life, and they also frame the loving relationships at the heart of the ministry. A couple of generations ago, we had a lot of confusion about boundaries, both in the Unitarian Universalist ministry and in many other ministries, and it led to a lot of hurt, disappointment, congregational fights, and in one case, jail time. Good boundaries enable us to frame the loving relationships that are at the heart of ministry. Now, a long-term minister will develop true friendships in the congregation, but a minister will also have friendships outside the congregation. Some of these will be professional, formed in ministry groups, whether denominationally defined like the UU Ministers Association, or interfaith groups such as the Interfaith Clergy of Ridgewood, which is one of the two best interfaith local clergy groups I've been in. There was another one that was just as good, but two out of a dozen? You know, it shows you how hard it is to do that well. But I treasure the relationships I have with several of the members of the clergy group here. The local interfaith group, I said, is one of the best. But this does not mean that a minister cannot socialize and be friendly in relationships in the congregation. It only means that the minister can never forget that the minister is playing a role, and it's a very important role, and will probably not find here or in any other congregation the kinds of friendships that last a lifetime because of that role. The minister is always on duty. Ministers need personal lives outside the congregation. Ministers who have little in social lives or networks outside the congregation are not taking good care of themselves, nor their families, nor their congregations. My workout time at the Newark YMCA is absolutely essential, not only for my physical health, but to my spiritual and emotional health. Yeah, on the questionnaire, the assessment questionnaire that the interim ministers and boards do three times over the course of 2 years, it says, does the minister have a spiritual practice? And I say yes, and it's at the Newark YMCA. And if there's a chapel in that YMCA, I haven't found it yet. There was a chapel in the one I went to in Florida. My workout time is absolutely essential. Plus, I have friends there who know what I do for a living but are content to treat me as a fellow gym rat, who also, like many of them, loves jazz. It's walking distance to the Newark Museum, so when they do their jazz concerts at noon on Thursdays during the summer, a whole bunch of us will head out from the Y three blocks over to the museum, listen to the music, and come back and get back in the gym. Well, because relationship is so central to the ministry, ministers must have friends outside the congregation, as I said. And this is one reason why we have so many chapters and cluster meetings. If you think the minister's always going off to chapter and cluster meetings, you're probably right. But they're essential. There, we can give each other advice, help each other with challenges, and also be the kinds of support for each other that you need from your minister. And sometimes real friendships grow up out of that, and I have a few. One going back 40 years with someone I almost never see in person, but we're good friends for 40 years. Now, these boundaries all relate to the Unitarian Universalist principle of the worth and dignity of every person. They affirm every person's worth and dignity. Ministry carries an element of power to it by nature of the role, and it requires good boundaries and good ethics to use that power well. I know you use like to say, yeah, we just pick him out of the crowd. He doesn't have any real power. Well, you wouldn't work so hard on finding a minister if you really believed that, and finding the right minister. So these boundaries relate to the principle of the worth and dignity of every person, also to the principle of congregational polity, that is democratic process, that which is also one of our principles. So in closing, I come back to the importance of presence. Your presence in the many ways that you make yourselves present to the community as a whole, to the congregation, and to each other as individuals. So be there for your sake and for the sake of others, for the sake of this precious institution. Think about these things when you get to meet a ministerial candidate a little later in the spring. Ministers come and go. You are here for the long haul. You care for and nurture the ministry over the decades. It is a precious gift that you have. Use it well.